Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Allison Kramer. Thanks for being with us, Allison.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, Allison. Can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got involved in veganism?
Sure. It actually started when I was pretty young. My sister, who I kind of consider like my best friend, she's a lot older than me, about 17 years, and she was a huge influence in kind of like my upbringing and my perspective on food. Not so much with animals. I've always been a huge animal lover. Like, it just, I was a kid with like a million pets in my room, and just like, I still do. I have a lot of rescue animals now. But what my sister did back when I was probably around 12 years old is she was a vegetarian, and so she would take me out to a lot of natural food stores, and we lived in Ohio, so back then there weren't many of those around, as hard as it is to believe. So I was kind of introduced to vegetarianism early on from her, and once I got a little older, I'd say about 13, 14, I started investigating it. I turned vegetarian myself, started going to the library to read about, you know, animal rights and just vegetarian diets in general. And I remember there was just this one single book on vegetarianism that in the very, very, very back, there was a tiny section about veganism, which is so funny when you think about it today with all the books available. But that's all that it took. And I thought, wow, this is where I want to go. And so I immediately turned vegan. And my parents were rather supportive, and that's kind of how it started.
Do you think it's a balance between animal rights and health that motivate you, or is it more, you know, from the health side?
Well, at first, it was definitely just animal rights. The health thing, I guess, did influence me in a way, too, because my father, he had diabetes. He passed away probably about 12 years ago. But he had diabetes and was kind of constantly struggling with his health. So I know that when I was about 14, it was an influence health-wise, but it just made no sense for me to eat animals when I was that age, too. So maybe about 30% health.
In your most recent book, Naturally Lean, you go into a little bit in your introduction about how your relationship with food has changed and, you know, how you struggle to eat well, you know, and how to eat healthy or whether to eat healthy or not. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your experience and what brought you to a greater focus on eating healthier now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had been vegan for a really long time. And of course, you know, naturally that makes you incorporate more vegetables. And I had always been aware of the problems with certain foods, as long as they were brought to public's attention, you know, like aspartame and stuff like that, hydrogenated oils, those things were always something that I knew about, but I never made the direct connection to health and food until, honestly, it was about 2009, I was diagnosed with celiac disease, and that really changed my perspective, and it was slow, but it was a like, wow, this is a wake-up call. What I am eating is literally affecting my health in this strange way. And so from then on, I really started to gain more awareness. And honestly, it was from the internet. A lot of bloggers were kind of talking about the benefits of eating more raw foods. And that really, it really piqued my interest because since I had been a teenager, I've never been super overweight, but I had always struggled with my weight. I always felt like eating less was kind of the way to go. And once I discovered that, you know, instead of rationing out how many, you know, sweets or whatever I would be eating per day, if I just replaced that with vegetables or fruits, I could actually eat a lot more. I feel like I had that discovery, you know, not that long ago, maybe like 5 years ago or something. And it was really life-changing for me because I did start to feel better, and I also really started to lose that bad relationship I was having with food.
And, you know, I think that's a great point is people feel like a vegan diet is one in which you're so restricted. And as you point out in your book, there's actually, you know, plant-based foods tend to be lower-calorie foods, and so you're able to eat more throughout the day and still maintain a healthy weight and not have to restrict yourself, because you have to only eat half a bag of fries and, you know, half a burger or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I made the direct connection through nutrients, you know, like how important those are. So, like, you eat the French fries, and they're vegan, but there's not that many nutrients in those where you can eat, you know, like a really, I'm just thinking of like a super colorful bowl of veggies and beans and grains, maybe some herbs, and you get like so much nutrients. I mean, your body needs those. And that actually sparked me into applying for a nutrition program. And that's what really got me interested in writing Naturally Lean. It was that, you know, like, wow, I felt like there was like this big secret that no one was talking about, that you can like just eat all these great foods, feel wonderful, and not have to hate your body. And I think it happens a lot with women more because of the pressure that the media puts on us for, you know, having to maintain this whatever ideal figure that they put out there, and how do you struggle with that when you want to eat? And that was kind of a pivotal point for me as well.
What nutritional program did you take?
I actually was enrolled in Drexel University here in Philly. I've since changed my program because I fell back in love with psychology. But my main goal through all of this is to connect the well-being of people with what they're putting in their body, their lifestyle changes. Like, I have a really holistic view on that. So now I'm actually going to Temple University here in Philly for that. And I really want to connect the whole basis of mind, body, food, and what you're putting into it with mental health.
So you're interested in the psychology of carnism and veganism?
Yeah, I mean, in really just eating in general, because like you said, so many people are like just kind of unaware of how easy and how delicious vegan food can be, or, you know, just like plant-based eating in general. I think there's a lot of people, especially here in Philadelphia, that just aren't aware of it, you know. And there's all these community gardens going on, that, especially in the lower income neighborhoods, that I think can really encourage people to grow their own food and to eat healthier and to consider plant-based eating as not only an economical alternative, but one that is sustainable for the environment and will help their well-being mentally.
Well, I thought maybe there was a pretty vibrant vegan community in Philadelphia since, you know, you have Veg, one of the most noted vegan restaurants in the country, located there.
Yeah, absolutely. The vegan scene here is very vibrant, but I think it's limited to, you know, the people that are in the know about veganism. One thing that I want to do is kind of spread that idea about healthy eating and kind of mind-body awareness to maybe pockets in Philly that aren't exposed to that as easily. You know what I mean? Like the people that are, I want to say, lower income, or maybe just like not had that access to the education.
Or access to the food choices that, you know, some people require to make the transition from being non-vegetarian or non-vegan to being vegan. Because, I mean, for a lot of people, they can go to Whole Foods or they can go to Sprouts or some kind of grocery store and buy all these alternative products, that most of those are quite expensive. So if you're a low-income person, it's harder sometimes to make the transition when you don't have those alternatives available.
Sure. And the access, again, which, like, the community gardens are so essential, because there's food deserts located, especially in pockets of North Philly, West Philly. It's really hard to get to places that even offer fresh produce. Hmm. And, you know, for children, that's really important.
Right. And, you go to a lot of the corner stores, and it's filled with, you know, big things of cheese and mm-hmm. processed meats. And so it definitely does make it more challenging. So that work would be great. I'm curious, you know, I'm not really known as a great chef around my house, but I'm wondering what do you think are some of the best ingredients? And then I'd like to go to some of your, you know, look at some of your recipes. But what do you think are some of the best ingredients to have on hand so that you can readily make up a lot of great meals of a different variety?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, especially when I'm thinking of like low income here too, but like pasta is awesome. If you're not gluten-free like me, it is very, very cheap to have on hand, and you can get it in a wide variety. I love the kinds that are infused with like spinach and vegetables. And I would say definitely look towards brown rice, whole grains like that. Oats are always good. All these grains are super filling, very high in nutrients. And then, of course, whatever produce is locally available at the time, if you happen to be growing your own garden, just, you know, greens of all sorts are almost always in season, even in the colder climates and the colder, I want to say, like, months. Like, you can get kale and collards or the hardier greens. And you can also freeze those. So, you know, definitely greens, pretty much any vegetables. Mushrooms are wonderful for texture and keep a lot of dried herbs on hand, because that can really take your food to the next level. And for protein, I think some great choices are just simply tofu, silken tofu, beans. I love beans. I cook them all the time. And, of course, nuts. But in particular, and this isn't really technically a nut, but cashews are really great. If you buy them in bulk, it's a little bit less expensive, but you can make so many things with them, from, you know, taco filling to queso sauce.
Cheesecake.
And yes, and cheesecake.
I thought we were talking about a healthy thing. But, you know, I do think that you make a great point about beans, because I think beans get a bad rap, you know, because people are always like, oh, thinking it's, I don't know, undesirable to have like rice and beans. Or, you know, here in El Paso, we have a huge Hispanic community, and rice and beans are a staple of the diet. And, you know, I love them too. And I don't see why people have like a bad perception about eating beans.
Well, there's the flatulence problem.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's a status thing. You know, if it's readily
exactly
available, it's something that you can have all the time.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah. But, and, you know, I think the beautiful thing about what all of the things that you just said, everything is readily available. It wasn't, not, I don't think anything that you just said would raise anyone's eyebrow, like some sort of random, you know, banana flour or whatever, you know, whatever thing that sometimes you can cook with and make things
taro
great.
Taro root or something.
Yeah, yeah. But,
right.
But all, I mean, everything that you said is readily accessible in most grocery stores and something that people wouldn't, you know, wouldn't flinch when you tell them you can cook with it.
And then you can store most of them too, like she pointed out as well. You know, that's another great thing. They can be frozen or stored for quite a while. So if you can't get to the grocery store all the time, you can at least store them.
So you go through, and the book's beautiful, by the way, I guess.
Thank you.
It speaks to the fact that you're perhaps an artist as well.
Yeah.
but you go through, you know, a variety of things, salads, hearty grains, legumes, squashes, roots and mushrooms. What are some of your favorite, I hate to put you on the spot, but what are some of your favorite recipes from this book?
Okay, you are putting me on the spot. it's going to be the nutty butter little can, like they're cookies. I have a sweet tooth, but one thing that I found really tames that down is to eat kind of like a healthier sweet. So those are made with dates and macadamia nuts. And peanut flour, and swap out nuts for those. And that's one another thing I think that having like cashews and almonds, which are a little pricier, on hand is really great, because you can just kind of throw those in the food processor and make that really quickly. And I'd say the second favorite recipe is the insanely addictive queso sauce that I have in there. And it's also made with cashews, but it's colored and kind of flavored with an orange bell pepper. And so instead of, like, relying on vegan cheeses and stuff, I really wanted to focus on just using readily available produce. Some of the recipes have a little more peculiar ingredients, but that was kind of the main goal. And I like those because I make them all the time.
I know, like, the Korean Napa tacos stood out to me, the Mighty Mac and collards, I know I butchered some kale chips at my house once, but you have some cheesy barbecue kale chips that look great, and like a mint chocolate chip smoothie. I mean, there's just a ton of different recipes. I'm surprised it's so easy to do so many things gluten-free. When I go to the grocery store, I'm not really thinking about, you know, gluten-free items, just not really in my standard vision. But do you find that most of the plant-based products or the meat alternatives have gluten?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's really what got me interested in this. It's like, I don't want to just keep eating tofu over and over and over again. So what can I do to kind of mix it up a little? And yeah, unfortunately, I mean, Beyond Meat is wonderful. When that was invented, I was like, okay, finally. And then, you know, TVP, and there's chorizo, I guess is what it's called. And usually that's gluten-free. So those things are really wonderful to have on hand in my house. And I really like the smoked tofu that you can get at a lot of the Asian groceries as well. But, there's a lot of them, unfortunately, that I just don't even look at anymore, because it's always a disappointment.
What about vegan baking with gluten-free flours? I always struggle with that. I've made many attempts and have had lots of little hard bricks. Do you have any? I tried to mix these red velvet cupcakes once, and I couldn't even get the dogs to eat them.
Oh, no.
I made them with, like, chickpea flour or something. Do you have any, like, tips for gluten-free vegan baking?
Yeah, actually, I do. My third book, Sweet Eats for All, was kind of that. That was, like, my master project on that because I, too, was so sick of eating bricks for baked goods. So what I found, and this might not be what the listeners want to hear, is that for whatever you're baking, you should really, for gluten-free in particular, you shouldn't really try to rely on an all-purpose flour because it's tricky. There's certain things that works really good for, like basic cookies, like white cakes and stuff. But like say you're going after a Madeleine or have like a recipe for kind of think like puff pastry or something. Those are harder to accommodate with gluten-free. So I tend to like to blend my own flours, and chickpea flour is one that I use a lot. But what you have to do with that to make it, I think, palatable is kind of mix it. Brown rice flour is probably one that I highly recommend having, especially if you can get it in the super fine grind. It makes everything so much better and easier. And I like chickpea flour particularly, you have to bake it long to get rid of that kind of raw taste that it can have. But I like it because it acts not only as a flour replacement, but it's also a really great egg replacer. Mm. So you don't actually need to put in egg replacement when you're using that flour because in and of itself, it adds like rise and lift and kind of like, I'm going to say like an eggy texture to baked goods.
Okay, so there's still hope. Maybe I'll give it another try and be more careful with the flour because I was, like, so disappointed. The picture in the cookbook always looks so beautiful, and then you take yours out and you're like, something went wrong here. It was not your cookbook. I'll just clarify that.
That's good. Well, check out my website. I have a lot of great basic recipes, for cupcakes and stuff, which I think are great starter recipes for gluten-free, and see if any of them, catch your eye.
And speaking of, so you have a couple other great books, one of them Sweet Eats for All, and then I'm curious about the great gluten-free vegan eats from around the world. I guess I'm always looking for, more creative and more exotic foods to make around the house. What are some of your favorites, again, to put you on the spot from that book?
Oh, that's my favorite book I've ever written, I think. It was such a fun research project for me to kind of, get a better view of what the world is eating. And honestly, I found through that one that there were so many different cultures that were eating a lot of vegan foods anyway. So that was fun. But out of that one, I definitely say the bulgogi recipe. It is fantastic. So good. And actually, you can find that recipe on my website, so you don't even have to purchase the book if you're not interested. Test that one out. Yeah, it's a Korean tofu bulgogi.
Nice. And speaking of your website, can you tell us where our listeners can go to learn more about your various books?
Sure. It's just my name. So it's Allison, A-L-L-Y-S-O-N, Kramer, K-R-A-M-E-R.com.
We've been talking with Allison Kramer, author of Naturally Lean. It has 125 nourishing, gluten-free, plant-based recipes, and they're all under 300 calories. Thanks for being with us, Allison.
Thank you so much.